Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. We have the Steelers coming to town, and we have my old friend coming back on the show again, Alex Kozora. Alex, how you doing?
Doing well. I know it's Steelers Ravens week when I'm talking with you, so appreciate the invite back on.
Always a lot of fun, Alex, and we appreciate your insights. Always level-headed, reasonable about things, and not adversarial, of course. But tough position right now for the Steelers, and neither the Steelers, the Ravens want to be in the position they're in right now. But the Steelers coming off a 26-7 loss to Buffalo this last week. The image from that game that is going to stick with me is I can't believe Aaron Rodgers got up off the ground after the hit he took and what appeared to happen to his left arm on the play.
Yeah, the bloody nose, the wrist injury just kind of sums things up. That was a low point in a lot of ways, not just for that moment. What will stick with me is not even just the fire Tomlin chants, but they booed Renegade. It's like booing Jesus in Pittsburgh. Like, that is the unofficial anthem, and usually that's the pump-up song that gets the crowd back into it. And so for that to happen really, I think, speaks to the frustration, not just from that loss or this season, but the mounting year after year, the same old team that wins 9-10 games, gets bounced early, just can't get over the hump, feels stuck. And I think the fans are really starting to feel that and more audibly express that frustration.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's very tough. And are you at the games generally? Do you go every week or do you watch from home?
No, I don't go to the games. I watch from home.
Okay. I mean, that has to be a very tough thing to experience in person. I can't imagine some of the things. First of all, a lot of people at that point in the game are going to have left already. But a lot of the people who would have stayed might have been Bills fans. They travel pretty well, and, you know, they would have been certainly in the stadium at that point. It's hard to imagine a large crowd of highly vocal people still around, you know, late in a loss like that to Buffalo.
And those who were not there for cheerful reasons, but it's an impression that it's not just obvious to us, but I'm sure to ownership as well, Art Rooney II. And this has happened earlier in the year, not in the booze capacity, but the Packers game, a lot of Packers fans at that game. And so the frustration of Steeler fans, lesser attendance, probably selling more tickets, and the opposing crowd has been able to have a bigger impact than usual. I think in one game, it might have been the Packers game, Pittsburgh had to work on a silent count at home, which is just, it never happens. And so again, kind of speaks to where the feeling of the franchise or the fan base is certainly residing.
Yeah, you probably heard about this already, but the other few weeks ago, Minnesota had 8 false starts at home against the Ravens. It wasn't a matter of there were a ton of Ravens fans there. There are people who will say that. That really was not the problem. The problem was the Ravens might have been inducing some of them. Mm. And it's interesting that to see that happen. Okay, so talk about the QB situation in a little bit more depth here. So is Rodgers going to play this game? Or if not, will it be Rudolph? Who will it be?
It'll be Aaron Rodgers. Maybe not 100%, but pushing in that direction. He came out, bloody nose aside, not worse for wear in terms of the wrist injury, which is a non-throwing hand, his left wrist, left arm. Multiple broken bones to the reporting, but he'll push through, probably still wear that black brace on it. Pittsburgh had to operate exclusively from pistol and shotgun against Buffalo. They could not work under center. The comfort wasn't there, but the belief is they're going to be more equipped to do that against Baltimore. Will there still be some sort of mix of pistol? Perhaps, but they're going to be trying to push in that direction. But Rodgers will be starting this weekend. Yes, he didn't practice today. That's become standard. He'll be back, I'm sure, on Thursday and start on Sunday.
Sadly, that's also kind of a standard for the Ravens, is Lamar Jackson is not starting, is not practicing fully on Wednesday either. Mason Rudolph came in for a little bit. He's been in a fair amount the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he replaced Rodgers on that one drive after the hard hit, the strip sack fumble that Rodgers took to open the second half, threw an interception, and then had the final 3 snaps of the game. Started the week before, has not played well this year. I still think he's a quality number 2 in terms of a guy that's done it all, come off the bench, started the whole week, day before the COVID year, got the 2021, got the nod 24 hours before kickoff after Ben tested positive for COVID. So he's kind of been battle tested in that regard, but has struggled this year. And again, Rodgers will certainly be the guy this weekend.
All right. Let's talk about other injuries. We heard about Farmer. I understand he's been ruled out for this week. So that's correct, right?
Derek Carmen, yes. He's out for this game with a knee injury, second straight week. And so it's a big blow. Pittsburgh's run defense has struggled mightily, especially without Derek Carmen. In the 3 games in which he's missed, which was week 1, week 2, and then last week, Pittsburgh has allowed 548 total rushing yards, 4.6 yards per carry, and 5 rushing touchdowns. Not all related to Derek Carmen, obviously, but he's played good run defense this year. The pass rush has been not quite as there, but it's been a really steady presence as a run defender. And so to not have him in this game against Baltimore is a scary thought. And certainly, trying to replace him has been difficult for Pittsburgh.
Steelers fans no doubt remember the playoff game. The Ravens outrushed the Steelers 299-29. This Ravens team has not been that Ravens team at any point this season. One of the big things missing for the Ravens is the misdirection component of their game is completely gone without Lamar Jackson being able to run the football effectively.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of getting into the Ravens state, but it feels like Lamar has not run nearly as often. No game of 10-plus rushing attempts this year, which has never happened before in his Ravens tenure in terms of him being a full-time starter. And so, Pittsburgh has always had that battle of who do you choose? Do you take away Derrick Henry? Do you take away Lamar Jackson? Last year was a lot of focus on Jackson. Henry ran all over them. I imagine you still have to respect Lamar Jackson. Pittsburgh knows that history too well to not do so, but if that's less of an element, then certainly it'll make it a little bit easier to stop Henry without Derek Carmen.
Yeah, it's certainly been a problem there. It's been a problem in the pocket too, in terms of his mobility, getting around, extending plays and whatnot. And a lot of effective.
Can I just interject? Is he not healthy? Is it that he wants to play from the pocket more? What is the reason why he's not moving?
So he's had 4 different leg injuries that have occurred. And this is why he's taken Wednesday off every single week. But he had knee, toe, I think foot. And it's 4 leg injuries.
Okay.
Hamstring. He was out for a while with the hamstring injury. So we heard about the toe injury. We thought turf toe right away, and that that can be fairly mild, or it can be very debilitatingly bad, or you miss months, have surgery, etc. But he was back quickly, and he other teams aren't respecting the fact that he can run, and he's not running very much. And I think the Ravens need to find a way to allow him to run a little more. And maybe going back to pistol might be the Ravens' call. 2019, in Lamar's first MVP year, they ran out of pistol 46% of the time. And that would seem to be a logical thing to get him running towards the outside. But they really love Jackson out of sidecar running that offense through the mesh point, because it makes him have a much broader look at the field and be much more dangerous for a broader part of it. So it's just completely changed what the Ravens offense is and who Lamar Jackson is for him not to be able to run. So
gotcha.
All right. State of the offensive line for the Steelers. Let's talk through that.
It has been one of the bright spots. It's been a group that has coalesced and gotten better throughout the season, so I have been encouraged by that. Now, they suffered one key injury late in that Bears game, week 13, losing left tackle Broderick Jones, likely for the season with a neck injury. He's on IR, will not play in this game, of course. Reporting is he's not going to come back this year. Tomlin has not confirmed that, but we'll roll with that assumption until otherwise told. Andres Pete, a former first-round pick, longtime New Orleans Saints tackle and guard, started last week and played okay. It was only 43 snaps Pittsburgh ran offensively, so the sample size is very small to evaluate, but he'll be the guy at left tackle again. Isaac Seumalo, left guard, has had a pec injury. He's battled through it. He's been better and played some really good ball lately. Zach Frazier at center has been an anchor and rock solid. I really like Mason McCormick and Troy Fautanu, right guard, right tackle, respectively. Those guys have really been on the rise. McCormick is anchor. His base has gotten stronger. His technique, he's more comfortable. He was a small school kid, had some adjustments to make at the next level, learning offensive line coach Pat Meyer's specific techniques, especially in pass protection, the on-body, off-body set. So he's done a good job there. And Fautanu had his rookie year basically washed entirely by an MCL sprain in the preseason, dislocated kneecap very early in the regular season, but came back this year healthy. He's been excellent in pass protection. Not exactly a road grading run blocker. We'd like to see a little bit more there, but in terms of varying pass sets, some of the veteran savvy, he was an older college prospect coming out with a bunch of experience. He's had a really good year, and the line just together has worked well. Early in the year, some miscommunication on stunts and combination blocks in the zone running game. You've seen the group get a whole lot better there, and so I do like the overall progression of this offensive line, but losing Broderick Jones does hurt a left tackle.
So for Seumalo, is he in his UFA year this year, or does he have one more year with the Steelers?
He'll be a free agent in March.
Free agent in March, okay. Are you expecting the Steelers to make a effort to try and re-sign him?
I was pretty convinced they wouldn't for most of the season. I'm a little less certain now because he has been playing better the guard market's always pretty expensive, although he is now into his 30s, and that'll work against him, so I'm a little uncertain there. I should also mention, when it comes to offensive line, they really have sixth offensive lineman on the field, and Spencer Anderson, who's been their sixth offensive lineman, their jumbo package guy with Darnell Washington out there, so a lot of beef. He's the guy that Pittsburgh has been very creative with in terms of lining all over the place, wing, on the ball, fullback alignments, a lot of shifts and motions. They've really kind of been in their bag in the run game, and so he's very much core to this run game, even though he's not a starting offensive lineman.
So I think we might have just hit on it here, because the next question I really want to ask is, what is it that the Steelers offense does well? There's a whole lot of people who could say a whole lot of crap about the Steelers offense right now, but what is it that they do really well? One thing last year I remember is they broke tackles exceptionally well.
Yeah, and they still do that well in terms of having a guy like Jaylen Warren. You have to get hats to the football. He's a hard runner. He's an energetic runner. He's always been that guy, kind of that chip on his shoulder. He's a great story. Three different colleges, started out JUCO, went to Utah State, Oklahoma State, undrafted free agent, came to Pittsburgh, $12,000 signing bonus, carved out a role, special teams, cut his teeth, and still plays with that mentality. So he's certainly a bowling ball, a load to bring down. The short yardage game has been really good this year. Pittsburgh was abysmal in 3rd-and-2, 3rd-and-1, those short yardage moments last year. They've been a whole lot better this year, utilizing the tush push, which a lot of teams are doing, using tight end Connor Hayward in those moments, a variation of it, like you guys had with Mark Andrews a couple weeks ago, spinning off of that and running for a big gain against Chicago. Red zone offense has been a really big improvement. Number 5 ranked red zone offense. They've been terrible year after year in the 20s, basically every single season since 2021, but they've really been effective when they have gotten red zone opportunities. They probably don't have the volume that you would like. They've not been in the red zone enough. Their possession is just abysmal, worse than football. But when they do get inside the 20, they are putting the ball in the end zone. That has been salvaging some of these games. One reason why they're still 15th in points per game. So some of the red zone calls and concepts have been good. Other than that, it has been a pretty limited things that have worked well, but those are things that have been pretty consistent and constant throughout the season.
All right. That's interesting, because I'm hearing two things: red zone and short yardage. And these are things the Ravens have traditionally done, or have in recent years done very well. Last year, they put the ball in the end zone, I think about 75% of the time from the red zone. This year, they're back under 50. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's approximately there. Ugly reversal. And a lot of the Ravens results have been highly barbelled. So they've had a lot of explosive plays, but they've also had a lot of negative plays. And that is not good for the offense. I always say the value of variance accrues to the defense in when there's variation of result by play. That's good for the defense. It's very bad for the offense if you have the same average yardage. All right. So we talked a little bit about Harmon already. What about the other rookies? Johnson, Black, Bruner, those guys. I may be missing someone else too. It seems to me I'm missing somebody. Maybe the second round pick I'm missing.
Well, that was traded for DK Metcalf, so there is no second-round rookie this year. Caleb Johnson's been a real big disappointment. Third-round pick, has barely played this season, has not gotten a single snap, offense or special teams, in 5 games this year. Would have been 6. He got 3 snaps, garbage time, on that final drive against Buffalo. It's been a real big learning curve for him. I think Pittsburgh knew there would be a learning curve. He was a 1-year production guy, 21 years old, young guy out of Iowa, and you know, can run the ball, but can he do those things without the ball in his hand in terms of pass protection, in terms of receiving, running routes, protection? And he's really struggled in that regard. And when you're playing with Aaron Rodgers, you can't struggle as a receiver. You can't struggle with checks and assignments and pass protection and blitz pickup and those types of things. And when Pittsburgh has 2 really good third down receiving blocking backs and Jaylen Warren and Kenneth Gainwell, there's just really no role for Johnson to gain that trust. He had the big gaffe in week 2 as a kick returner. Pittsburgh tried to get him involved there, let the ball go past him. Seattle recovered in the end zone for a touchdown. And that kind of changed the tide of the season for Caleb Johnson. But it's been a really tough year for him. He was brought in as a true outside zone runner in Arthur Smith's system, but the results have not been there. We'll kind of see what it looks like come 2026. Y.A. Black has done a nice job this year, played defensive end, will replace Derek Carmen in this game at defensive end. Big body, has been better on the edges than I thought he would be, better laterally, has to probably work on his technique and be a little more consistent in that. The pass rush is not going to provide a lot there, but he's worked hard. Carson Bruner's been a core special teamer. He's played, I think, 1 defensive snap this season, but he's been a 4-phase guy there and done a nice job. So that's been the bulk of the rookie class. The 7th round pick, Dante Kent, just came back to practice on Wednesday. He had a foot ankle injury in training camp, was put on IR, and so he's just kind of working his way back. And then Will Howard, sixth-round pick, broke his hand in training camp, missed the preseason, started the year on injured reserve, is now back as the emergency third-string quarterback.
This is one of the interesting things about reading the Steeler boards recently, and I don't want to prepare for the show and whatnot, but it seems to be extremely defeatist, which I get that. I mean, the Ravens boards have that kind of a slant to them. Everything is a Fire Harbaugh quote over our Fire Harbaugh thread over here. But some of the things they're saying about Will Howard in terms of how can he be worse kind of thing is the same kind of things I hear about Daniel Faalele. You know, somebody's having a C-minus year, but he's above the replacement level. And people are, want to treat him like the archdevil.
Yeah, I would say in Pittsburgh, especially when it comes to quarterback, it's such a polarizing position. And every fan base loves the backup quarterback, though. What could he be? Mm-hmm. The highlights in college. Maybe there's something behind door number three that just has to be given the chance. And I was a big Will Howard fan. I liked him coming up.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Ohio State, I was surprised to see him fall as far as he did, but the only way he would see the field is either A, injuries, or B, maybe if they were mathematically eliminated late in the season, week 18 against Baltimore, maybe would give Howard the nod there. And really, I would do that just to get him some in-stadium reps because he did not play a snap in the preseason because he got hurt. And so it'd be good to kind of recoup some of those reps at a different level, regular season, obviously, than preseason, but just to have that to kind of get him back on the curve as he should be heading into 2026 with Pittsburgh, having a very uncertain quarterback for who will be the quarterback next season. I don't think anyone really knows the answer to that right now. There may not be any great options to find that number one quarterback. So could there be a theoretical battle where Howard's in it next year? It's possible. We'll see. But again, he's going to be the number three quarterback, and fans will have to wait probably a bit longer on Howard seeing meaningful action.
Let's go through that really quickly. So Aaron Rodgers' probability of being back in Pittsburgh next year, extremely low.
I don't know exactly how I would couch the odds. They started out decently. I mean, the decision is, does Rodgers want to come back next year personally just to play for anybody or attempt that? And that's a decision he'll have to make. I don't know exactly how long that's going to take. This saga took 3 months for him to officially sign in Pittsburgh. I don't think it'll take another 3 months in 2026, but we'll see. You know, is Arthur Smith back? You have to confirm that Mike Tomlin is back. I think he will be, but that door may be cracked open for the first time in Tomlin's tenure. So it's probably below 50%, but I don't know exactly where I want to put it because there's so many, I think, pieces still to move around and be in play. And if it's not Rodgers, I understand why, but the other options are not looking a whole lot better. And if it is somebody not named Aaron Rodgers, that's six different starting quarterbacks in six straight seasons. And it's really hard to, I think, build towards anything when you're constantly turning over your starting quarterback year after year at a rate this franchise has never seen before.
It's supposed to be a good year for quarterbacks, at least at the top. Is it a place where the Steelers might be drafting in the mid to late teens or the early 20s, either one, if they make the playoffs or they just miss, that they could still find someone? Or is this a case where they would need to probably trade multiple picks to move up into the top 10 and find somebody that would suit their purposes?
Well, I think the jury's going to be out on that. They're certainly going to look and scour the earth for all the top quarterbacks in 2026. There are some names at the top, but it's not like a couple of years ago with the Bo Nix class. We had six quarterbacks go in the first dozen picks where it was super deep. He may have two, three names, Mendoza, who declares, who stays, Dante Moore at Oregon. He may go back to school. Ty Simpson, Alabama could come out. We'll have to see. But if there were only two quarterbacks, Pittsburgh will be picking somewhere probably no higher than the teens. And so it is hard to move up there. They do have draft capital. They have probably a dozen draft picks they'll have in their 2026 coffers. But if there's only two quarterbacks worth taking, those teams at the top are not going to be budging to, and they will not be moving off a quarterback, obviously. So, you know, it's possible, but it's just hard to really bank on that thought of a quarterback right now. And then when it comes to free agents and castoffs, do you want to go down that road again? And if so, who is it? Anthony Richardson, Kyler Murray, Jacoby Brissett. I mean, it's just nothing there is really sticking out to you.
Joe Flacco might be available.
Yeah, why not get older? Why not?
Yeah. He'd be the one team hasn't had him play there yet, right? So right. In the division. Okay, let's talk about the other side of the ball now in terms of the defense. Obviously, while the defense probably has been the I don't know. I don't want to speak for you. What's wrong with the defense currently and what's right with the defense for that matter?
It's been a disappointing unit that had big expectations, that had a lot invested in it, both in the draft and in free agency, whether that's the acquisition of Jalen Ramsey, a first-round pick, and Derek Carmen, and just a commitment to let's get back to stop the run. And that was evident based on the Baltimore games, especially the wildcard game you referenced, a lot running for 299 on Pittsburgh, Henry running for what, over 200 yards, and really embarrassing Pittsburgh and sending them home. And the run defense has been extremely inconsistent. There have been good moments this year, whether that's the Bengals game rematch, the Colts game against Jonathan Taylor, the Bears game. The run defense was strong overall, but there have been some abysmal performances too. Of course, none worse than Buffalo on Sunday. Why that is, variety of issues, a lot of guys that can't get off of blocks, guys not being physical enough, missed tackles. It really is just kind of a lot of the foundational stuff in terms of the run defense. And then Pittsburgh's plan was, we're going to load up on cornerbacks, have this big three trio of Jalen Ramsey and Darius Slay and Joey Porter Jr. We're going to run a lot of man coverage and be able to man up and do stuff we have not been able to do in the past. And that plan has gone completely awry. Jalen Ramsey's now permanently at free safety. Darius Slay is now a Buffalo Bill, released and waived by Pittsburgh. Porter's had an okay season, but it's just not been the vision that Pittsburgh thought that it would be. And so when you combine those things, Pittsburgh's biggest threat defensively, the thing they do well is their pass rush, and quarterbacks are getting the ball out quicker than basically any other defense, facing any other defense in the NFL to thwart that pass rush. And so when Pittsburgh can't get those takeaways in bunches, their defense really loses all of its teeth. And so it's a lot of layers and issues to it, but inconsistent run defense, a secondary that's not playing the coverages they thought they would, and a pass rush that can't get home and can't make plays. Those are bad ways to win as a defense.
So it looked like the Bills were running a lot of an overload scheme to the right and were consistently running off tackle in that direction, bouncing until they found the hole, and they seemed to find the hole an awful lot on that D-gap on the outside.
Yeah, I counted 26 times they ran basically the same duo inside zone scheme, and Pittsburgh said they could not stop it. T.J. Watt said he's never seen a team run the same play over and over to that degree of success. And Pittsburgh did everything schematically possible, every personnel grouping, every sort of look. At one point, they were just putting as many bodies as they could on that side. So you don't see Pittsburgh kind of get their will imposed upon by an opposing offense like that often, and that was a really alarming factor. And it's... you'd like to think they're going to focus on that and try to get it fixed. But again, this run defense and this whole team has just been so inconsistent. You know, usually Pittsburgh is a fairly steady Eddie team. I know the record may reflect some level of consistency. They're going to be in that 8-10 win range this year. But in terms of what team you're going to get on a given week, it's been as unpredictable as I can remember in quite some time. There are some weeks where this team seems to be firing on all cylinders. The Colts game, great example of that. And there are some times where this team comes out and you can't recognize them. They've been a really bad second half team this season, outscored by, I think, a 40-plus point margin. They've blown four halftime leads this year. That's tied for the NFL lead. That's almost ties a franchise record for most blown halftime leads in a single season. So this team has got a lot of problems on both sides of the football right now.
Okay. Always like to get an update on the former Ravens. And one guy who I think has been fairly noticeably missing from the Steelers this year has been Deshaun Elliott, in terms of his tackling and incredible year last year, just absolutely astounding year last year, particularly in terms of his stops to missed tackle ratio, which is if you're an inside linebacker, that's the strikeout to walk ratio for an inside linebacker. And when you're a safety who's backing up Patrick Queen, who misses a lot of tackles, that's a guy also you really want to have. Talk about what his loss has meant to the Steelers.
Yeah, I think even beyond just the run defense, there was kind of a glue guy element to the Elliott. He's a guy that takes a lot of pride in the game, is physical, and is a really good tackler. Like you said, I mean, elite numbers last year in terms of a tackler and getting those run stops. And so Pittsburgh has certainly felt that. He got hurt, I think, in week one, missed some time, came back, re-injured his knee in a freak moment making a tackle downfield against Tucker Kraft against Green Bay. He is out for the season. Elliott basically confirmed that earlier, I think last week it was. They replaced him with Kyle Duggar from New England. They traded over midseason, and he's done okay to catch that moving train. He is a kind of classic box guy, not going to offer a lot in coverage, but still not at that level of physicality and kind of, I'm not going to let you beat me up kind of mentality. Elliott really has that chip on his shoulder and really appreciated his play. And as a blitzer too, Elliott was a really good blitzer too. Even in this year, the Minnesota game, he was getting some pressure and have not really been able to utilize some of their DB blitzes the way that they have in the past. So yeah, it's been a big loss.
Yeah. For what the Ravens could have really used a player like Deshaun Elliott earlier this year, maybe they wouldn't have traded away for Gilman at some point, and the Ravens pass rush could still have a, you know, some glue to it. Whether people in Baltimore are not crazy about Oway's pass rush, but boy, Deshaun Elliott has turned out to be a player. Patrick Queen, third year of a 3-year contract coming up next year. Do you expect the Steelers to pay up on it or to cut him?
I'm not sure. I think let the season play out still. I like to put all the hay in the barn before I kind of think about who's going to come back and who's not, but it's certainly no guarantee. Queen, big second year for him. He admitted as much. His first year in Pittsburgh was not what he or the team wanted, not just from an individual play standpoint, but from a communication standpoint as that green dot wearer, the signal caller. And the question of Baltimore was, can this guy have the green dot and play well? In Baltimore, that seemed to not be the case. He struggled wearing both those hats when Roquan Smith came over, did a better job. And so that's kind of been the issue in Pittsburgh still.
I'd say something else about this too, is Queen got his shot at the mic role and didn't make it work. And he's really needs to be a trail player behind a very decisive other player. And Pittsburgh's had a number of linebackers, certainly over the year and years in Ferrier and,
Timmons,
Landon Roberts. Roberts was a really good run defender who never was shy about getting the football. I mean, it just seems very strange for an organization like the Steelers to go for a guy like Queen. I was shocked by the thing. I was also shocked at how cheap he was at the time, in a sense. Obviously, Ravens fans were hoping for the best possible compensatory pick, and then he signs in the division for less than we thought it might be. Certainly less than he thought it was going to be. And, anyway, I'm a little surprised by the thing, but,
I think just the issue, cause you're right. Roberts was a big loss. He was the hammer against the run. They have that with another former Raven, Malik Harrison, who's playing a rotational role against big packages, 12 personnel, 21 personnel. When Ricard's on the field, I imagine you'll see Malik Harrison, but generally it's been, and the goal has been Patrick Queen and Peyton Wilson. And the problem is those guys kind of are the same dude, where they're athletic cover guys. They're not that super physical downhill type of player. I think Wilson is trying to work towards that and get better and block deconstruction. Queen is never going to really probably be that type of guy. So when you have kind of the two of the same guy, you don't have that hammer, then you're missing that in your run defense. So it feels a little redundant with Patrick Queen and Peyton Wilson. And if you are going to move on from Patrick Queen, I think you do that with the goal of let's get a different type of inside linebacker to pair next to Peyton Wilson to really complement each other well.
So Peyton Wilson at least has that in his background. He's an unbelievable stops him as tackle guy in his final year at NC State. It was like 11-1. It was like 44-4 or something in his last year at NC State. Whereas Queen has never had any kind of situation like that. That's always been a problem for him. So
yeah, okay. His tackles have continued to be high for Patrick Queen.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about players that match up well for the Steelers. Pick one guy on each side of the ball you think matches up well with what the Ravens present.
Yeah, I'm still going through my film study, so I always probably leave a disappointing answer because I know you always ask this question. I just don't have probably a great answer at the ready. I don't know exactly what the health is over there. I think DK Metcalf, I imagine Marlon Humphrey will see a good amount of him. I don't know exactly what you guys are doing in terms of shadowing and traveling. I know Humphrey is super versatile, and he can play inside, and they're trying to get Metcalf in the slot more this year, so I think that's going to be a good matchup. Will it be the most favorable thing for Pittsburgh? I'm not sure if it'll be the most favorable matchup, but I think it'll be kind of a fun one to watch those guys going at it for the first time inter-division.
Yeah, it might be actually Kyle Hamilton then on if he's in the slot. Kyle Hamilton now, the Ravens play 100% big nickel in 5 DB packages. They haven't played Hamilton was out for 5 snaps and they played 5 with a small nickel, but otherwise they played every single snap since week 5 has been with a with Hamilton at slot corner and every single 5 DB snap. And then they move him to dime on third down. So there'd be some difference in who would cover then. But and that would probably be Humphrey, as you say.
And then I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead of you, but defensively, I think Jalen Ramsey on Mark Andrews. Andrews getting the extension today. And when Ramsey made that switch to safety, it was for a variety of reasons, mostly because they've had injuries and they weren't getting good production with Juan Thornhill at free safety. But you've seen Ramsey really come in as that robber over the middle, take away those crossing routes. Played the Colts earlier this year, really took away Tyler Warren to help kind of solve some of their tight end issues they had early in the season with Tucker Kraft and just some of the other guys, Barner, I think, in Seattle in week two. So I think third down plays, Ramsey on Andrews. It may not be always where they're matching up man-to-man. It may be where he's lurking down and taking away some of those crosses Baltimore likes to run. But I think those could be some fun matchups between those two kind of heavyweights.
Can a player like Ramsey have any impact on Zay Flowers' ability to cross the field? So far, that's been the only magic sauce the Ravens have really had in their offense this year, is Zay Flowers crossing is uncoverable because he's too quick out of the top and he never sticks his hips because he's a smaller guy, sticks his foot in the ground, goes across the field. And it's exactly what Lamar wants to see, you know, in terms of throwing. It's a lot easier for him than to try and be an on-schedule guy. Is Ramsey a guy who can rob somehow or be effective in taking that play away from Lamar?
Certainly. You saw that against Jamar Chase in the rematch. There was certainly an element of that. I got to cut up Ramsey just taking guys' heads off over the middle on Michael Pittman, on Yosevos, on Chase. So any sort of crosser, you know, Ramsey's not always used. He's more the free safety, so he will play, you know, deep half, deep middle. Kyle Duggar is the more designated strong safety in this system, but I think in this game, you're going to be looking to take away any sort of crossing routes, and Baltimore seems to run those a ton, like you said, like I said. So, yeah, I think Ramsey's going to be lurking in the size mismatch. Ramsey's such a big dude, you know, will try to have some hard hits there to either, you know, knock the ball out or just make sure Flowers does not do any damage post-catch.
All right. Alex, always outstanding to have you on. Fantastic. You deliver information very quickly. Tell folks where they can read your work online and follow you if they want to.
Yeah, thank you as always, Ken. You can find us SteelersDepot.com. On Friday morning, we'll have our weekly scouting report on the opponent. So we'll do the Ravens breakdown offense, defense, special teams, both schematically and individually. You can find myself on Twitter at Alex_Kozora.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. If you have questions, please try and feed the new video format that I'm doing, especially if you like your question answered that way. If it's something I can answer in 90 seconds to 2.5 minutes, that's kind of ideal. If it's a 5 to 6 minute answer, I'd have to put it on a show, which is also okay because we got places for that. So make use of a hashtag film study mailbag. Alex, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.